Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From the Scratch Lab Studios in Boulder, Colorado, I'm George Thomas, roadbikerider.com radio. The Six Success Factors, part two, here with John Hughes. And Vice President of Training Peaks, Bryce Walsh, thanks very much for joining us. Always good to chat with you. And John, why couldn't it be the seven success or five success? It'd be so much easier to say.
Five would be easier than seven, but yeah.
That's true. Eight.
Eight, well, yeah. Why not 12? Then we could do six podcasts.
That's right.
There are six, which I will enumerate. Planning and training, which we talked about in the first podcast, nutrition and mental, which we're going to talk about in this podcast, and then equipment and skills in the next one. Bryce and I were chatting during the break, and we agree that one of the most important things that coaches do is simply provide a plan. Not any old plan, but most plans, simply some discipline and structure will help a lot. And before we dive right into nutrition, it might not be quite the right way to say it. Before we talk about nutrition, remind listeners that I mentioned at the end of the last podcast that endurance training is all about pushing the wall farther out before you hit the wall and your brain's fuzzy and your legs don't work. And the reason that happens, your body can only store a limited amount of glycogen, which your body then metabolizes into sugar to fuel your muscles. And even sitting here right now talking, we are burning some sugar. You're never burning purely fat. And so what endurance training does is it increases the amount of fat you burn and decreases the amount of sugar you burn at a given intensity. So it's saving sugar that way. And it increases the amount of sugar that your body can store by 20 to 50%. So that's an intro to nutrition, and you can kind of hear where I'm heading, which is eat sugar. Right, guys?
Absolutely. Sugar-coated bacon is my dream food. Oh, I don't like the look you're giving me. Okay.
Sugar-coated donuts are
Donuts.
You guys remember Ed Cross?
Absolutely.
You remember who Ed Cross was sponsored by one year for Ram? He had the big banner. Well, George, you've done my tours. You know what the favorite snack food is? Pop-Tarts.
Absolutely.
Ed was sponsored by Pop-Tarts, and he had a big Pop-Tarts banner on the front of his van. And people say, oh, my God, sugar spike, then you crash. That's actually not what happens physiologically. The problem is you eat some sugar, and then you simply burn it all up again. So as long as you continue eating sugar, and I'm serious, you're good. Now, I'm not necessarily talking about white sugar. What happens in your body is it's burning glucose, which is one of the sugars.
Ooh, you had me thinking we could just bring bags of gummy bears on our training ride, but okay.
You can. What's the sugar in gummy bears?
It's probably white sugar.
probably sucrose. And the reason I mention that is a little more physiology. You can metabolize up to about 60 grams of one kind of sugar. So you could eat 60 grams of gummy bears, George, in one sitting, and you could digest them. 70 grams of gummy bears, your stomach would get all gummy.
Oh.
And say, excuse me, this is too much. So 240 calories of one sugar you can put down and digest. Research physiologist Asker Jorgen Drupp did a lot of research, whereas if you eat two different kinds of sugars simultaneously, you can digest up to 90 grams. So what I recommend for you as a race diet, George, is 60 grams of gummy bears and 30 grams of banana.
I can do that. In fact, that'd look kind of cool to push the gummy bears into the banana. You got to get creative with it. How much sugar did you just burn by saying Oscar Jagendrup?
Quite a bit. Mostly in my brain trying to figure out how on earth I'm supposed to pronounce his name.
That was very well done.
Yeah, did you like that?
Okay, thank you.
So I eat very little raw sugar. I eat honey. I eat molasses. Eat a lot of fruit. I recommend a high-carb diet. What are carbs, guys? Name some carbs for me.
Bread.
Pasta. Potatoes. Yeah.
Bread.
Apples, oranges, bananas, carrots, celery. All of the vegetables, all of the fruits are carbohydrate, a little fiber, and water. So when we talk about eating carbs, we're not talking about eating necessarily white bread and pasta with lots of greasy pasta sauce. There are a whole variety that you can and should be eating. I don't eat a lot of pasta, rice, et cetera, et cetera. I'm really heavy on the veggies and fruit, which have got more nutrients, micronutrients, so vitamins and minerals, than white bread. So for me and for the people I coach, that's the biggest part of every meal. If you want to envision your plate, your dinner plate, your breakfast plate, and it's mostly covered with carbs, and there's a little piece of protein about the size of a deck of carbs, of protein, deck of cards. So think about protein as a condiment rather than a main dish. Now you're both training hard for raw. Be honest, what are you eating?
Well, my wife says I've never met a carb I didn't like. I'm actually trying to eat really healthy these days, but I'm eating a lot more than I normally do because I've actually been trying to bring my weight up.
Is it working?
It is working, to a point, but it's not, you know, I feel good. A lot of salad with protein on it. I'm eating a breakfast every day, which is very not normal for me. I generally use raw gluten-free oats with yogurt and fruit. I love it. Again, they're not cooked. I really like the raw oats for some reason. And then toast with egg. I like to hard boil a couple of eggs, two slices of toast, slice the eggs up and put it on that. That's generally my lunch. And then salad and soup at dinner.
So George is getting a little protein each meal, which is good. You're boiling your eggs. You're mm-hmm. not frying them nope. or scrambling them. So that's very healthy, reducing the fat. My breakfast is pretty similar. I have yogurt, berries, and some granola, and a little wheat germ, and copious amounts of coffee, of course. Bryce, what are you eating these days?
You know, I am probably the bad example here, right? I am meat and carbs. I think would be the best way to put it. Eggs for breakfast quite often. Yogurt during the week a lot though too. But yeah, I'm a Midwestern boy. Meat and potatoes for sure. And a lot of pasta. Trying to be a little bit better about getting more vegetables into the diet, but that is definitely a weak spot for me, for sure. So
you're eating what we call a RAD diet. A regular American diet.
Yes, probably.
And my guess is that probably a few of you out there listening eat that, and I'm not suggesting you toss out the meat and start eating just vegetables. Tweak it a little at the margin. No matter where, tweak it a little in the margin so you're getting more carbs. And how you do that is less important than doing it. Another part of it that is really important is, and George started to touch on this, George eats breakfast. Do you eat breakfast, Bryce?
sometimes.
Okay. You know, all through ski season, I never ate breakfast, never ate lunch. I'd just grab a snack, which is, you know, it was not healthy weight loss combined with high stress.
What I do if I'm rushed for breakfast, I actually made time this morning to eat at home, but had I not had time, is I'll bring along a bagel and a couple pieces of fruit to eat in the car while I'm going somewhere. And one of the nutrition tips I picked up decades ago is instead of smearing something tasty, like cream cheese on my bagel, I put on a little hot sauce. Gives me some flavor, not a lot of fat. Now I want to come back to your point of snacking, George. That's how I eat. I eat a pretty small lunch or breakfast. I have in my bag an apple and a pear that I'll eat, you know, when we're done mid-morning. And then I'll have a smallish lunch. And then I'll have some, I usually have some vegetables an hour or two before dinner, partly because I like vegetables, partly because it fills me up and I don't eat as much for dinner. And then have dinner, and then up until the last week or so, I've been having a very healthy snack before bed, which is a bunch of grapes. I love grapes. And we've also introduced a nice big chocolate bar into that.
Which is, I wanted to bring that up because one thing I really like are raw beets. I like the way they make me feel. I would throw a raw beet in the Vitamix with some water and then drink it, which made me gag, but I would feel like $1 million out on a ride following that. But I found that, or I've heard that dark chocolate gives you the same type of physical reaction that eating a raw beet does. So I've switched over to dark chocolate because it's a lot more palatable.
It really is. And anything in moderation is fine. You know, we were joking about going out for a few beers after the last podcast. Yeah. In all honesty, we didn't. But had we had a beer with lunch a couple of times a week, that's not the end of the world. Having three beers every night, that's not so good. What I needed to do is wean down to where it's half a chocolate bar in the evening. I mean, you know, I mean, Bryce likes eggs for breakfast. That's not the end of the world. He's getting protein. That's good. Mm-hmm. So two basic points. One is eat carbs. The other is eat frequently. It's what I call grazing. Now, when you've done Paris, 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 Bryce, what have you eaten? How have you eaten?
So the last few times I've carried drink mix so that I get a certain amount of calories and use drop eggs. So I could at least rely on a certain amount of calorie intake that way with something I knew my stomach would typically deal well with. But then other than that, it has just really been very, very basic things. I eat baguettes along the way with sandwiches. I mean, that's pretty much my standard thing in PvP was ham and cheese baguettes, you know, because I knew that they wouldn't upset my stomach and would give me a sense of feeling full in addition to using a sports drink as well. So
Bryce has tested his nutrition and figures out what works on a long ride. Had a client once who was into 24-hour races, and this particular individual was trying to figure out what to eat that would go down and stay down, so this individual got on the trainer every morning and rode and rode and rode and ate. I did PvP first time back in 79, and I'd done a bunch of double centuries, and I thought I had it dialed in, so I figured, baguettes and bananas, what else do you need? And by the time I developed mouth sores about the second day, hard baguettes weren't so good. And you also get really tired of that stuff. And so I just stopped eating. And what my body did was cannibalize my muscles, my protein, to produce the sugar that my brain needed. So my muscles even started to go away. So that's not a good way to eat. So I assume you ate outside of the... in addition to at the controls, Bryce?
No.
Or at least consumed your drink?
Yeah, the drink was always there. Though, I mean, to be totally honest, the last few times I've found that I've had to change from the drink I was using because of, you know, it's been many years. I've been using the same thing for years, and I think I've been starting to not be able to drink that for as long as I used to, which has been that's also been an interesting thing as I've gotten older now. You know, like acid reflux things are more common and stuff like that. So I've had to reevaluate all these things that used to work fine for me for, you know, days on end, sorts of things. And, you know, nutrition is always really, really hard over these multi-day events, especially. I always kind of say, like, a, you know, 12 hours, I can eat almost anything. Like, I can eat pizzas and stuff like that for a 12-hour race. But when it gets to when it starts getting near 24 hours and after 24 hours, then it's where you really have to be more diligent about what you're taking in over the course of the race.
So from my experience, diligent both in terms of what you're taking in, the quality, and when you're taking it in.
Yeah.
The American College of Sports Medicine recommends that if you're doing an endurance workout starting in the second hour, eat 120 to 200, call it 100 to 250 calories an hour. And that works great if you're only doing a 2 or 3 hour ride. But if you're doing something longer, you really need to start in the first hour and eat closer to 300. Back when I lived in California, which has rainy winters but not snowy winters, I would train in the winter and try to do a winter century every month. And I figured out that as long as I ate and drank 300 calories every hour, I could ride 100 miles in the rain and not be happy, but I wouldn't bonk. I wouldn't hit the wall. And so I learned, and I try to teach my clients to eat by your watch. We were hiking in Bryce National Park with friends a couple of weeks ago who don't have a lot of experience with nutrition. And on the first hike, the woman bonked. She'd had a big breakfast, and then she felt sort of lightheaded and had to sit down. And fairly obvious to me, but I didn't say, well, blankety blank, you didn't eat. You know, she ate something and she felt better. And so the next day we did about a 3 hour hike, and kind of kept track. And at the end of an hour, I said, well, you know, I'm going to stop and eat. What do you mean? We had a big breakfast. I just don't want to have happen to Sue what happened on Monday. We're going to stop and eat. And we all ate. We're walking along, and the way Bryce works, it's wonderful, wonderful canyon. The first hike of the canyon is kind of downhill and really cool scenery, and then the second half is uphill. And so at that point, it became even more important to eat, and I kept watching my watch, and about 45 minutes into it, there was a very nice kind of rock pedestal we could sit on. I said, okay, see this pedestal? We're going to sit and eat. And we did. And we all had plenty of energy to get to the top. So part of it is the regularity. Just staying on top of it, because once you start down that deficit trail, you're in trouble. George, what do you eat on more on endurance kind of rides, brevets and so on?
I really like rice bars. I'll boil up rice, mix in egg, either Swiss or Parmesan cheese, and sprinkle some bacon up in it, and smush them all together. Use sushi rice, so it congeals pretty well, and I really like eating those. It's good flavor, it's plenty of salt in it. And the other thing that I really like when I want something sweet is a payday bar. You've got sugar, you got peanuts, and I love them.
Payday bar, Snickers, any of that kind of stuff. Now, a caution with your rice bars. Knew a couple of racers, and they'd gone through the Boulder Junior Cycling Team, and they'd moved up. They were on one of the development teams, and they decided what they'd do for a good hard training ride is they'd ride over Trail Ridge to Grand Lake, and they'd spend the night, and then they'd ride back the next day, which seems a little much to me these days, but still. And they liked those rice bars. And by the time they got to Trail Ridge, they were having real digestive problems. And by the time they got to Grand Lake, the digestive problems had moved on down the system. And the problem was food poisoning, quite simply. The rice will ferment, the protein, any protein should not be out of refrigeration for more than an hour. And so if
you I was thinking more of raw, we just keep them all in the cooler and
perfect.
I mix up a big bowl. I don't even make that into to bars. I just pull a, open the cooler, grab a spoon, eat a few bites and go.
Yeah, for something like that where you can keep it refrigerated, that's great. Raw, if you're doing it, you know, a RAM qualifier or something where you got a crew, they can keep it refrigerated. That works great. But what about, I mean, you know, I know you do some brevets in the spring, at least some years. What do you eat on them, or do you?
I don't eat that much. I like the candy bars. I generally will bring, I don't like energy bars that much. Yeah, boy, you, Little Debbie's. They're cheap. They're easy to carry and they keep.
Why on earth would you spend $2 to $2.50 for a bar that doesn't taste good? That's what I've never been able to understand.
Yeah, I just, I don't like them. Little Debbie's, it's $2 for a dozen.
I personally like Fig Newtons, and I like breakfast bars, granola bars, and they work really well. A couple years ago, I wrote an article, again, it's available on the Road Bike Rider website, on pro-nutrition, and what do the pros eat and drink, and I interviewed several people in the Peloton and that work with the Peloton, and they eat a lot of real food. If you're out there doing a six-hour stage, bars and sports drink get really, really tired. They're doing little sandwiches, you know, called panini, boiled potatoes, so forth and so on. And part of what's in this article is how to make your own sports nutrition that tastes just as good, if not better, and is really cheap. You can make your own sports drink out of orange juice, water, salt, and sugar. It's got all the same stuff that XXXAID has. And you can control the sweetness by how much sugar you do or don't put in. So there are articles for sports drinks there. There are articles if you want to make your own gels, how to do that. Recipes for solid food. So check that out on the website, Eating and Drinking Like the Pros.
Now we've gone through three success factors. What's going to be our second one for today?
I wish I could remember, you know. You get to my age and it's CRS. Actually, we're talking about mental, which ties in quite directly. I remember back in 91, I had a training partner. 90-91, we were training for PBP both years. And we get to where one of us was feeling pretty crappy, and we'd say, when did you last eat? And that was usually the key. I mean, I've stressed over and over, the brain only runs on sugar, so if you haven't stopped for a piece of pie recently, or pancakes, or eaten Little Debbie's, they're going to run into brain trouble. Now, Bryce, you and I were talking before, and you said, in some ways for you, the mental's the most important factor. Talk a little more about that.
Yeah, you know, I've found that especially these longer events, for sure, well, and, you know, even just regular bike racing to a degree, most of the training that I've done over the years has been building self-confidence, I think, rather than necessarily needing to do a certain amount of time or a certain amount of miles for an event. I always think back, I always think to the RAM buildup when I raced RAM. I probably put in, I think, 13,000 miles just in the year right before June for that particular event. I don't think you need 13,000 miles to get ready for RAM in that year. The reason I did that was to know how I would feel after doing multiple days of a long time out there, how I would feel getting back on the bike after sleeping for an hour and a half. All that stuff was to build up the self-confidence that I knew that I could do this when I was out there on the road. So I always kind of think about it that way. I think anybody that's reasonably fit can make it through these events. It's not, most of us aren't super athletes. We're not like, you know, we aren't these, you know, once in a lifetime sort of genetics models or anything like that. It's really just almost about stubbornness and building up that personal strength to continue on. So that, yeah, I think that kind of sums up my view of ultra racing there.
A brief point, then I
would have to agree.
want to hear in more detail your thoughts, George. Jens Voigt, you guys remember Jensy, retired a year or so ago, and he said he really wished he'd had more confidence when he was racing. Now, here's a guy that used to go on solo breakaways for, 200K. And he said the reason he did that, he didn't have the confidence that he could, sprint in a bunch. And he wished he'd worked more to develop his confidence. Interesting if somebody, a pro like that, has to work on confidence. George, you and I have talked about past years when you've been training for Raw, and you read about these people that are doing mega miles.
And you're not. I did solo Ram in 95, I skied all winter, and I think I had maybe 3,500 miles going into it. It was your Pacific Crest Tour that was really my main block of training. That was 13 days. And physically, I wasn't really ready with that few miles. I lost my neck and some other things. But Bryce totally nailed it. It was really just, I'm out here to finish. I got to keep going. And I didn't feel like I needed a bazillion miles to train before I went out and did it. I just needed to feel like I was fit and ready to go.
Yeah, the tour that George is talking.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thinking about it was my Pacific Crest Tour, which was back and forth through the Sierra. And it had around 1,500 miles in the 13 days, and turned out it had 120,000 feet of climbing. I kind of estimated 80,000 feet from that.
You saw how bad a shape I was in at the beginning.
we won't go there. We thought we were just going to drop George at the next town we got to and tell him to take the Greyhound. Those were really hard days. And you weren't sleep deprived, but you had to get up the next morning and get on your bike for another hard day. And that's an important part of building confidence. Talked a little in the last episode about how I work with riders preparing for PBP or something like that in peaking. And a lot of that is building the confidence that you can ride until you're pretty tired, 200K, take a really short sleep, and get up and ride some more. One of the things that I have people do is a simulation ride similar to what the two of you are doing for Race Across the West, in that I'll say, okay, I want you to go out and ride 300K. And every 25K, I want you to imagine that you've covered 100K in Paris. Where will you be? What will the weather be like? How will you feel? What will you be wearing? And that's a way of getting your head around it. Another way of doing it, we talked in the last session about planning, and part of planning is planning for an event. I got a good friend, Kim Freitas, rode Paris with Kim once, and she taught me an important lesson. She prepares three plans for every event, like PVP. And one is the plan she hopes to ride. When she's going to get to each control, how long it's going to take. One of them is the tailwind plan. Life's good. getting some good packs, drafting. And one of them is, this is not going well plan. And even with the this is not going well plan, she knows that she can finish in under the time limit. And so that helps her. That's another way of kind of getting your head around the event, thinking it through. And if you're out there and you're shifting to the not going well plan, instead of throwing up your hands and saying, oh my God, I'm going to DNF, you say, okay, I'm in the slower plan. I'm just going to keep chunking along. So all those kinds of planning work really well. I was actually just working on a column for RBR newsletter and talking about endurance riding. You guys ever gotten discouraged in the middle of a long ride?
No, never.
Okay, good. George is Mr. Confidence.
He's very optimistic, you know. So.
What about you, Bryce? Have you ever gotten discouraged?
You know, probably almost every single event I've ever done. I mean, that is part of the draw of these in a lot of ways. There's always going to be that moment where you didn't maybe get enough calories in or you're not feeling great, but you keep going and you get through that struggle, you know. And I think that's part of maybe the addiction of long distance racing, actually, in a way too. It's like, I don't know if it would have as much draw if it was just, oh, that was easy. If it was easy, you'd feel like you hadn't put in everything you could while you're out there anyway, especially on a race. So
I was on a training ride Saturday and just feeling horrible. I wanted to turn around and quit. And I thought, you've got to keep going. And I mean, it was just, I seriously, no joke, was thinking it's time for you to take up curling.
Curling's good. I mean, how often do you do crunches, George?
No, I'd want to be the guy with the broom so that I wouldn't even need to be over.
In a recent issue of the newsletter, Ken Bonner did a kind of a self-portrait of his cycling career. And Ken got kind of a late start. He didn't start until the early 80s. I started 10 years ahead of him. Of course, Ken improved a lot more than I did. And it's a wonder-if factor. God, I've ridden 200K. I wonder if I could do a double century. I've done some double centuries. I wonder if I could do a 400K. I wonder if I could do a thousand. I wonder if I could. You keep doing the I wonder if until you get to the point where you say, okay, I could do that, but that's enough. And it's really the mental thing of can you do it? Two things that I've learned over the years, like Bryce. Most rides for me that are over about 50 miles, I get discouraged in the middle. How long was your ride this weekend, George?
Oh, short. It was just up to Peak Highway, so 30 miles. But it was in the middle of a 17-mile climb, and I was just like, wow, I'm really terrible. I don't want to do this anymore. And 5 minutes later, it was gone, and you're fine.
That's what I call the ugly middle, and it may not go away in just 5 minutes, but every long ride that I start out, I feel great at the beginning. My legs are fresh. I'm strong. I'm doing great. And then I get to where my legs aren't so fresh. And it's still a hell of a long way to the finish. You know, I mean, you're halfway to Ward and your legs are tired. And you've got another couple thousand feet.
Oh, everything else was tired too.
Everything else is tired too. And then you get to where you come around the corner and it gets to that 15%. But there's only a mile kind of 10 to 15%. And you can actually smell the barn. You
but
know?
When you're going 4 miles an hour and you know it's going to be another 20 minutes.
Fair enough. But the point is, toward the end of a ride, you start to smell the barn. And most rides have this pattern of feel great in the beginning, the ugly middle, smell the barn. And so if somebody listening is getting discouraged in the middle of a long ride, instead of throwing up your hands and saying, I should start curling, say, oh, well, it's what Coach Hughes calls the ugly middle, and it'll pass. I'll start to smell the barn. Another important part of it, and it's something that I think probably works for you two guys on Raw, as well as a lot of other people, set a short-term goal. Yeah. I mean, all you got to do is hammer for 15 minutes, George, right? That's all you got to do. And then Bryce has to do it. You don't have to hammer for half an hour. Years and years, back in 95, I coached the Packmasters, four men who had met on Pack Tour. And I was the crew, or And I was the crew chief, and I was setting up the pulls and so forth and so on. And I misjudged one pull, and the rider actually had to pull for an hour and 20, was only supposed to pull for an hour. I was pretty darn upset with me. And understandably, his mental goal was, I got to ride for an hour, and then I'm done. He had to ride for an hour and 20. So a way to get through stuff. I'm not as fit as George is. I ride to up to Ward, but I don't say, well, I think I'll ride to Ward. I say, bet I can ride the 5 miles to the junction to Jamestown. Mm-hmm. Bet I can climb another 500 feet. Yeah. Gosh, keep going. But there used to be a couch at that rest pullout up at the 11 mile mark. I don't know if the couch is still there, but I can ride to that pullout.
I didn't see a couch.
I haven't seen a couch in a while.
So setting really short-term goals. You know, I mean, if you're doing a brevet, all you got to do is ride to the first control. I had a neophyte rider that I was coaching to ride a couple of centuries, and said, all you really have to do is ride to the top of the hill. Don't think about how long 100 miles is. Ride to the top of the hill. And then you think about the next goal. I worked with a friend and client once who was doing Furnace Creek 508. Felt severe digestive trouble. This person was convinced that with the combination of throwing up and diarrhea, the rider could not possibly finish. And I said, I know you can't finish, but you owe it to me. You really owe it to me to ride to the top of this climb. And we kept doing that, and the individual finished and qualified for the race across America. And this person developed it, the problem, only 150 miles into a 500-mile race. But by simply focusing on the short term. What other mental factors work for you guys?
I was going to reiterate, I think when I first started doing brevets, it might have even been Lon that told me, like, never think about the entire distance. Always just think about the next turn, you know? And I think that always sort of plays into the way I've looked at these things. I always joke that I don't remember the course on any of these things. Like, I talk to people and like, oh, I really love that course. I really like this one section, this one climb, this one descent. I don't remember them at all. I like all the races that I've done, except for, you know, some of the ones that I've done multiple times where you start catching it. But, you know, some of the loop races especially, like, every loop's new, almost in a way, to me. It's like it's a new experience every time I go through it. So I think it helps with that. But, and kind of that breaking through the mental aspect, I had RAM, and also when I tried to do, I did the 1,000-kilometer track record, I cramped up at the very beginning of both of those. Like, I mean, it was within, you know, the first, you know, probably 5% of the event, and that it's that, again, getting back to that idea that, like, yeah, you just get up through that next lap, that next climb, eventually you kind of break through and everything starts loosening up and you start feeling better. Obviously you got to do some things to get rid of cramps to feel better, but then everything starts moving again then too. So I think that's one of the fun things about these events too, is to like realize, oh, that was hard, but I got myself through that.
Right.
You know?
I always just have a really good chat with myself of, I can't take this pain anymore. And then I'll just think, you could quit and the pain would go away in a day or two. But if you quit, you've got to live with that from now on. And I remember failures really vividly, and I don't like that. So it's like, if you can just get through this period and keep going, the pain's going to be over in another 24 hours. So do you want to finish in 24 hours or be kicked back and resting for the previous 24 hours? And it just always wins out to keep going.
Another thing that I learned from Lon Haldeman, when I was racing RAM and having a hard time, he told my crew, don't let John quit over anything that will heal within 2 weeks.
It's a famous Lon quote, yeah.
It goes back to George's point. I mean, it hurts like hell right now, and if I stop, it'll stop hurting, but really shouldn't do that. When you're doing your 15-minute pull, George, what are you thinking about?
Depends on if I've been eating well or anything like that. It's really bad in a relay race where you're going all out and thinking, oh my gosh, I wish Bryce had asked someone else to do this because he'd be doing a whole lot better right now. Otherwise, I just try to get totally focused in the moment. And I found that I used to be really not depressed when an event would come to an end, but I, over the last few miles, I'd just be thinking, gosh, what could I have done? If I'd only done this, I could have been faster. And I've really changed my mental attitude after all the therapy from the accidents I've had of, if I go into an event and I feel like I've done my absolute best and I've prepared as best I could that my schedule will allow and you beat me, I'm happy for you. I hate it when we come up at a finish line and there are excuses for, well, John, you know, good ride, but I had all this go wrong. Well, you had a lot of stuff go wrong too. And if I've done the absolute best that I can on the things I can control and you beat me, that's awesome.
Now, the chances of my beating George are slim to none, but two comments. George made an extremely important point, which is focus. When he's riding as hard as he can, if he's thinking about something else, he's not riding as hard as he can. He's got to be 100% focused. And I meditate every morning as a way of focusing simply on my breathing. To learn to focus, 100% focus. And on a good morning, I only have 20 extraneous thoughts come through in 20 minutes. And on a bad morning, you know, I'm thinking constantly about other things. But it's a skill you can learn by practicing. And there's an article on the website about sports psychology, using mental skills to improve your riding. Second point. There was a second point. What were you, I forgot, George. What were you talking about?
Oh, Bryce wishes he had chosen another partner.
I know. If you've done your absolute best and you come in second, so be it. It's important when you're thinking about goals to set what we call SMART goals. So you want something that's specific. Not to finish raw, but you want to finish in X hours. You guys got a goal time for this one?
We haven't discussed this yet.
We finished in 52 hours and 45-ish minutes last year. And, you know, I it's hard for me to do that with an event like this because maybe the winds are going to be different. It might be 120 degrees in the desert. We might have van problems. That's why I always want to be very focused on what I can control and do the best I can with it.
I'm going to get back to what you control and do the best you can, but a goal isn't really a good goal if it isn't measurable in some sense. I mean, the goal could be as simple as finishing with the time limit, mm-hmm. but you got to have a goal. Bryce, did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I mean, that was exactly what I was thinking of, you know, especially with the work I do. That's kind of the main aspect of it is it's not a goal unless you can measure it. I'm shooting for 50. I think we should try and break 50 if we can. But we'll see, you know, and if we don't get there, I think that's where you said you have the perfect scenario, you have the fallback scenario in your head. I think for me, my goals with it are to be steady, to make sure that I'm maintaining a power output through mine without getting overly excited, you know. So I'm going to be looking at things like that with each pull, where I'm like saying, okay, you know, keep it even, make sure that, you know, you're not burning yourself up in the first 3 minutes when you know you got to be doing these 15-30 minute pulls every single time. Let's try and be steady and you know, probably a little conservative to start, but so I'll be looking at goals like that all the way mm-hmm. through the race too. And I think the smaller goals will add up to then the bigger result at the end too.
I'm glad you said 50 hours because I'd kind of like to break 50 hours.
So that leads into the third part of SMART goals. First part is specific. Second part is measurable. Third part is achievable. And given the way you two guys ride, going sub 50. is achievable. But we could all think of a couple of other riders who, if they said they want to go sub-50, you just shake your head. That is simply not achievable. No way. The fourth part, the R, is realistic. And realistic means given the amount of time you have to train, mm-hmm. given the complexities of life, given your current physical condition, can you put in what it takes?
Yeah.
I don't know. I got 3 weeks to do it.
Yeah. I think we'll find out probably with this trial run a little mm-hmm. bit too, and maybe we'll have to readjust at that point. But and that's a little bit of the learning experience on this particular event for me too, is like, how does the handoffs, how does that improve our speed, you know, too? Like, you know, I'm sort of looking at like, okay, if I were going solo, I could do about this. And then now that we have all the rest periods in there, rather than having to just keep your pace at a sustainable for, you know, 2.5 days, how much more of an increase can we make that as a team? And I think it's an interesting problem, but it's something that's going to become more clear as we get more familiar with riding with each other too.
So Bryce is making a really important point, which is break it down into small goals. If somebody's doing say a 1200K, break it down into, when do you want to get to the first control? What's your goal for that? How can you measure that? Second really important point is the one that both of you are making, which is all you can really control is your preparation. And do your absolute best in your preparation. And if there are hellacious headwinds, or you have a serious mechanical, or it's super hot in the desert, or somebody else is just having a better ride, you can't control those variables. And all you can do is get to the finish line, like George is saying, of knowing that you have done absolutely everything that you can to prepare. And you've done the best in the event, but other things are outside of your control. And it doesn't matter whether it's a century and you want to put in your best possible preparation, or a 600K, or a 12-hour time trial, any of those. And absolute best preparation comes back to our success factors, all six of them. So what we talked about last time, planning and training, what we're talking about this time, nutrition and mental. What we'll talk about next time, equipment and skills. And my experience as a coach, mental is the most neglected one of the six, and where people can make the most improvement. Do you guys agree with that?
I would say, yeah, I would agree it's neglected. I think it's kind of, as we mentioned before, it's tougher to measure progress on that one, though, as well. So setting goals for mental is hard.
Very hard.
That's pretty much what I work. I love working out on the indoor trainer because it's so mental. And I visualize, I mean, I'm in the desert. When I'd be hiking a hill at the ski area to set up a course before we opened and carrying all that stuff up, I was on the 10% grade in Monument Valley. Bryce was in the van needing me to take a pull. It was such a vivid situation, and I couldn't stop. And I'm over 9,000 feet working up there and hiking up this thing, and I was totally in Utah on that climb, needing you to have me keep going. And I try to stay focused, but I know in Monument Valley I'll be back hiking up the ski hill going, come on, you did this before, you can see black things moving in front of your eyes and keep going.
Back to Bryce's point of it's hard to have mental measurable. It's extremely hard, if not impossible, to measure improvements. But you can measure and log faithfulness in practice. Did you do mental training every day? I have one client who is easily distracted and doesn't sleep well, and I have this client report for every night how long this individual slept. But I also have this client doing specific breathing exercises to learn to focus and relax. Then I also want to come back to the visualization. I learned a really powerful lesson about this back in 1992 when I was riding Boston, Montreal, Boston, and I'd already done 3 1,200K, so there wasn't a question of could I ride 1,200K. I was going into it to be the first finisher. One does not win in brevets, right? But one can sure go to be first. And I visualized. My then wife and I, we were down in Santa Fe, and so what I would do is I would put my helmet on and put my shoes on and my shirt, you know, my riding kit, and I would sit outside, if I could, in the rain, because it was probably going to rain sometime during BMB. And I would visualize riding the first 400K, and I wasn't thinking about it. I was there. As many physical sensations as I could get, sitting there with my eyes closed, I was doing the first 400K. The next day, the second 400K. Third day, the final 400K. And I went through that twice. Huge effect on my confidence. Within about 15 miles of the start, I started in the second group, the fast group. There were about 10 of us. I was off the back. I mean, those New England hills, they're steep. And steep is not my forte. Well, okay, I visualized this, I'll catch him. And by the second control, I was in the lead, just as I'd visualized it. And I'm riding along, and about 2 a.m., I'm getting really, really sleepy. And then I saw this store with a covered porch. And I went over, and I lay down, and I had something to eat, and I took a 20-minute nap, just like I'd visualized. I'd actually been there and done that in my visualization. Got up, and I kept going through the whole event. I'd never ridden in New England. I had no idea what it was like. But having visualized it, I knew what I was doing, and I was able to keep going. So that's another really important tool. And it's not about analytically thinking about it. It's about imagining the experience. And one of the reasons I stress mental, one of the reasons we're all talking about it, is especially as I get older, my clients get older, it's harder and harder to improve physically. You start to plateau. It's harder to get more out of your body. But if you can improve mentally, all kinds of different ways, ride smarter, you can do as well as or better than other people. And better doesn't have to mean faster. It could mean it doesn't hurt as much. It could mean having more time to stop and enjoy the controls or whatever, you know, smell the roses. So
any articles people can check out on roadbikerider.com that you've written, John?
Well, there's the new one that just came out on the 6 success factors and how to become a better cyclist. There's the one I mentioned on sports psychology, using that to be a better rider. There's the one I mentioned on eating and drinking like the pros. So check those out, please. Thank you, gentlemen.
John Hughes, Bryce Welsh, from the Scratch Lab Studios in Boulder, Colorado, roadbikerider.com radio. I'm George Thomas.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.